Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday, October 5th. Currently, we've got, 48 degrees here in Old Town Park City. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Thomas Gaboy. Good morning.
Today, we are going to see some pretty big changes in our weather. This is something that we've been talking about really over the last handful of days, where yesterday it was a beautiful day along the Wasatch Back. And for the first half of today, it's going to be quite nice as well. It's mild outside in Park City compared to where we should be for this time of year. And for this afternoon, we're going to find a daytime high of 69 degrees. But as the day goes on, cloud coverage will continue to increase. So we got a little bit of cloud coverage out there now. Expect that to increase as we go into the afternoon. And by the afternoon, we'll also have the chance for showers and even a few thunderstorms and the rain chance as we move into the afternoon and this evening. Actually going to be quite substantial, about a 70% chance for wet weather. So for this afternoon and evening, if you have any plans to be outside, just maybe take the rain gear with you just in case wet weather does find you. Then into tonight, we keep that 70% rain chance as an overnight low drops into the middle 40s. All of this is being driven by a low pressure that's working its way from southwest to northeast. That's finding its way into Utah. The rain chance tomorrow, not going to be quite as high as today, but we're not going to be able to eliminate the chance of rain as we are going to have lingering moisture. So we'll start the day with about a 50-50 rain chance, and then that rain chance goes to around 40% as we go from the morning into the afternoon. And it's also going to be a cooler day tomorrow with a daytime high of 63 degrees in Park City. So as we go throughout tonight, tomorrow, and then tomorrow night, we're going to see overnight lows in the middle 40s, keeping a slim rain chance Wednesday night. Then we're back to a 50-50 rain chance for your Thursday with a daytime high in the lower 60s. And then that rain chance looks like it's going to be picking up even more from Thursday night into Friday as a second system will be arriving from the Pacific Northwest. And this is not only going to increase the chance of rain even more, but it's going to cool us down even more. So on Friday, it's a 90% chance for wet weather along the Wasatch Back. So that rain chance looks to be even more substantial on Friday compared to what we're going to find later today into tonight. And the daytime high will go from a daytime high of 61 on Thursday to 52 on Friday, so significantly cooler. A low of 37 degrees on Friday night, keeping the chance for showers. Showers remain likely heading into Saturday with a daytime high of 45 degrees, so it's going to feel a little bit more like late October compared to early October. And then from Saturday night, we'll see an overnight low possibly dropping to or just below freezing in Park City. And if we're able to have enough moisture around, we might even be able to get a few flurries out of that. Then Sunday looks to be mostly sunny with a high of 50, close to freezing again for Sunday night. But then we'll bring back the chance for showers heading into Monday, Columbus Day, with a daytime high of 53. So much cooler temperatures are on the way, and it looks like we'll have a good chance of rain here in the next several days as well.
Thomas, hey, thank you. Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Tom Fisher, taking a look at the agenda for tomorrow's county council meeting via Zoom and at the South Summit Services Building in Camas. Then Park City Municipal Trails and Open Space Manager Heinrich Dieters with details about Walk 2, a committee that is looking at the next steps in addressing walkable and bikeable connections throughout the city. Finally, the owner of Alpine Forestry, David Tellian, talks about the work that will be done to make the Treasure Hill open space safer from wildfire. Well, the Summit County Council will be meeting via Zoom as well as at the South Summit County Services Building in Camas tomorrow. On the phone with a preview, Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. The proposal, or the county council, I guess, is being asked to consent to an annexation to Francis. That proposal is called Hidden Meadows, some 550 acres to the west of Francis. The developer is Rusty Webster, proposed to be a, quote, conservation subdivision, which is defined as a project where at least 50% would be open space. So there is an issue here for the council to decide. The annexation would form a peninsula of county property. So is the staff recommending that the county allow this peninsula?
I think the staff is looking at a couple of things. First of all, the town of Francis has petitioned for this annexation to happen and has accepted it. So the town of Francis is favorable towards it. But, you know, you're right, it does cause a peninsula. And usually those types of issues we'll get into more deeply because they can cause things like bifurcated road maintenance, for instance, is one of those items that could be caused by a peninsula where, you know, you're moving in and out of different jurisdictions as you travel along a road, which then we have to come up with agreements on how we're going to maintain those things. But, you know, I think that's what the council will be weighing. Right now, I'm not seeing a strong recommendation for or against from the staff. So I think we'll have to discuss that, and it may take one or two meetings for us to come to a conclusion on that.
Okay. Do you know what we're talking about in terms of density here?
I don't. I didn't see that in the staff report. You know, it's really if this does get annexed into the town of Francis, it's really up to the town of Francis to determine that density based on their code. Our code on this current property, it looked like it was designated as AG 80, so one unit per 80 acres. I'm assuming that it's higher. It's the proposal is higher than that, given that they're looking at a conservation bonus on that.
Okay. Council, tomorrow will also be considering a new five-year trash contract. This will run from July 2022, the current expiration date, through July of 2027. The staff reports that they looked at three applicants and recommending the current hauler, Republic Services. So can you kind of outline the reasons the staff is choosing Republic again?
Sure. You know, it went through an extensive process. We had a really good participation from an internal team of our public works director, myself, sustainability with Emily Quinton, and then we brought in Luke Carton from Park City, their sustainability manager, and then Mayor McCormick from Camas. All helped us evaluate all three proposals that were received. You know, we really started this process last year with quite a series of meetings with the council to kind of narrow down what it is we were going to be asking for in the proposal. Went through that process of an RFP, got these three bids that were evaluated. And at the end of the day, although, you know, price is always a factor, and Republic Services had the lowest proposed price. But, you know, familiarity and the extent of their service area locally really are what won the day, along with a proposal to help the county build a transfer facility for recyclables and perhaps green waste. Those two factors are really what caused Republic Services to be over the top and be the choice that we're going to bring to the council.
So when you say willing to develop, does that mean help pay the cost of?
Yeah, I think, you know, certainly, you know, when you're talking about a service provider that's going to propose something within their bid, somehow that cost is going to be captured if they're offering to do that. But, you know, they have the experience of doing this type of work. We've seen that in other counties, Washington County being the best example in Utah. But they actually brought forth the proposal about how to do it, some initial look at how to pay for it. And what that would take. So that being that that's probably where the county needs to head in order to improve the capture of its recycling in order to reduce that amount of waste going into the landfill. That was one of the factors that helped us suggest Republic.
Yeah, so what does a recycling transfer station do?
So what it does, it benefits us in two ways. First, you bring all your recycling to it locally. So it would be a local facility that all of our recyclables would come to instead of individual collection trucks traveling down to Salt Lake City. We'd collect that all in one space, and then it could be sorted so that we could take care of some of the contamination issues that plague our recycling program. So those could be sorted out, and we could consolidate that those recyclables into the commodities that are the most valuable, and haul those out in bulk, as opposed to one collection truck at a time. So it helps us consolidate our recyclables and get rid of that contamination. And it means that we don't have those trucks traveling back and forth as often, and we consolidate those into larger hauling vehicles.
My understanding is one of the biggest causes of contamination is that people put the recyclables in a plastic bag, and when those are found down at the station in Salt Lake, they're just thrown away. They're not even opened. So
yeah,
is that something you would be, we would be opening these plastic bags?
I think we would still encourage people not to use plastic bags. That is one of the biggest issues of contamination, but that is one of the things that we'd be able to either sort out locally or take care of locally in order to reduce that contamination issue. But the contamination also deals with what's the other things that, that people co-mingle with that, that recycling, and we could take care of that as well.
Yeah. So will residents still get curbside recycling pickup?
Yes, they will. Under this, this proposal, those things will not change. We'll still remain on a every week for garbage, every 2 weeks for recyclables. Those factors were all the same in all the bids.
Yeah, and we can't put plastic bags nor glass in our curbside. Will that change?
It's possible. We had each of the proposers look at other ways of dealing with and having curbside service for other types of things like glass, like green waste or food waste, and we have options to bring that forth in the future. I think we're going to work with Park City and watch what they do in some pilot programs on that before we opt in. But if we get enough interest through the contractor to do these things, they can start those services as well.
So would it mean a third can if we were to do the green waste pickup?
I think yes. If it may not be a can, but some type of collection method will have to be provided from a curbside perspective if we go with any of those opt-in services.
All right. So what is the cost of the contract? You mentioned it was the lowest proposed price.
Yeah, the lowest proposed price, but you know, it still is an increase, and quite a hefty increase over what we have paid in the past. So we had projected, or at least Tim Loveday had projected, that last year when we were talking to the council, that we were probably going to be looking at about a $600,000 increase for the first year, and then in ongoing increases after that for our next contract, and that's about where it came in. We're going to have to figure out within the different ways that we collect revenue for solid waste, and that is mostly property taxes and then some fees.
Yeah.
Of how to absorb that cost.
And we're also, in addition to the, you know, the general fund, paying a $40 annual additional fee. Is that going to go up as well?
It's not determined whether that's going to go up at this point. I don't believe we're increasing that as part of our budget proposal this year, but I imagine that's going to be an ongoing conversation. I mean, we brought forth that fee for the reason of eventually getting solid waste collections to pay for itself. And, you know, it's not close to that at this point, even at the level that it's at right now. So that's going to be an ongoing conversation within the community about how we pay for our overall solid waste program in the future.
Yeah. And then what about just the equity of the can, the size of cans? I mean, there was not a universal switchover. There are some people who still have their big blue, I don't know, 60-gallon cans that they can use for trash as opposed to the smaller gray cans.
Yeah, I mean, the can issue is an expensive part of each of the proposals. And, you know, Republic has the county now owns all the cans that are part of the service. That was that at least they will. We will by the end of this current contract. you know, we will continue to switch out cans as they age out. And that's part of each of these proposals. And that was definitely part of Republic's proposal to continue to switch out cans as they age.
Okay. So people will be getting the smaller cans eventually.
Eventually. That's correct.
Will there be public comment allowed tomorrow, or do we hold a public hearing later?
This is not really a public hearing item. You know, this is a contract for service that the county does on a regular basis. The reason that it's coming to the agenda is because of the dollar amount, and the council has a decision to make in order to give direction to staff to take that into a contract and a contracting process, but it is not a public hearing item.
All right, so if the council says yes, then what happens next?
Then our attorney's office will start working with the chosen bidder to come under contract, and we need to do that fairly quickly. So, you know, if we did decide to go not with the staff recommendation, of course we'd have a switchover time period that we'd have to deal with as well. With Republic, we don't have that issue as much.
Okay. And again, you had mentioned a $600,000 increase. What is the current contract?
Current contract is somewhere in the $2.8 million range, and we're facing a new contract that will probably be up in the $3.4 million range.
Okay. Thanks. Once again, council will be taking public comment on the $50 million open space bond. So far, you haven't heard any opposition, so much so that there won't be an opposition statement in the public information pamphlet. Have you personally heard from any critics?
I personally have not, but you know, this is because it proposes a tax increase for a period of time until those bonds are exhausted, or the term of the bonds is lifted, and that tax increase would go away. I would expect that there is some opposition. That would be natural to see that when costs are going to go up in order to pay for a new service like open space and ag preservation. I think that's one of the reasons why the council is being very open and trying to have as much public input and public information as possible. Of course, we're limited as staff and the council to just providing factual information at this point because the issue is on the ballot. That's why you're seeing an outside group hold a meeting after our council meeting in Camas tomorrow in order to provide an open venue for some information to be passed by both the proponents of the bond and by staff who will be providing factual information.
Okay. Anything else on the agenda that you wanted to mention before I ask you about a couple of other issues?
No, nothing else.
Okay. I guess just first, what was your reaction last week to the county council saying that they did not want a truth and taxation process this year? Is that going to be tougher for you now to plan a budget?
You know, it's tougher in some respects. Just because we had kind of been planning on doing that process because it is part of our policy. But at the same time, I mean, I totally understand where the council is coming from. The open space bond is what they're telling me as the manager is that this is our highest priority. And this is our highest priority for this budget. And you know, it's my job to react to that and bring forth a budget that supports that. So, you know, I'm working with the budget committee right now to reformulate our recommendations so that we're ready to make those next week at the hearing or the my recommendation time on the 13th. We're still going to be bringing forth a very healthy budget. Even though that the council has decided not to do truth and taxation this year. I don't think we're lucky this year that revenues have just, you know, just as been reported with Park City and other entities, revenue has been very healthy on the sales tax side. We've been so conservative in the past 2 years related to adding to fund balances, we're very in order to fulfill the needs that they have been working on. Did you lose me?
For a second, yeah, there.
Sorry.
Let me, in terms of that, though, will you, being conservative, I mean, do you have the reserves then that you'll be able to pay the sheriff's staff what the council has basically said they want to?
Well, you know, absolutely. I mean, that is a high priority. The council over the past year has been very active in making sure that our public safety areas, as well as other areas of the county, that we're taking care of our employees. I mean, the reason we're doing a very comprehensive salary survey this year is because the council expressed we want to make sure that we keep our employee base, that we're keeping up with inflationary pressures and other pressures on our salaries and benefits. So we're going to be taking a very close look at that. Our fund balances are very healthy because of the last truth and taxation process we did 5 years ago. We've fulfilled that promise and brought back those fund balances. In some cases, they're over our threat, not due truth and taxation this year in favor of making sure that we can pass this open space bond.
It also sounds like council members were almost persuaded to look at an increase for Service Area 6. Are we talking basically the entire Snyderville Basin except for maybe Service District 3, Silver Creek, or is it specifically Jeremy,
no,
Pine Brook?
Yes, Service Area 6 is all of our subdivisions. So whenever a subdivision is created, and the roads are then accepted into the roads and sidewalks are accepted into the county as acceptable, those become part of Service Area 6. So, you know, for instance, when Silver Creek Village, as those phases come and are built and are accepted by the county, those become part of Service Area 6. So, you know, it's a very, it's one of those areas where we have to keep a very close eye on it because we want those areas to pay for themselves. So, you know, that $300,000 deficit that we were suggesting in truth and taxation, that's not a huge amount of money from the grand scheme of the county. So we can certainly look at some of our other revenues to make that up. We're not going to slow down servicing those roads and sidewalks to make sure that we keep up with that maintenance. We'll be bringing forth a proposal in the budget to make up for that.
Okay. Finally, I wanted to ask you the fact that three of the Summit County Council members wrote a letter to the editor saying that they are backing Park City mayoral candidate Nan Worrell, also taking a jab at Council Member Tim Henney, calling him a isolationist, because communication and collaboration, they say, between Park City and the county is faltering. In your view, is that fair criticism, given that both entities have spent the last 18 months dealing with the pandemic?
Well, you know, Leslie, every once in a while somebody tries to get me to comment on the political side of things. And, you know, I'm ethically bound not to be part of those discussions and not be part of that. That protects me and especially the budget from those types of activities. I will say that and I think it was supported by the article that I read or the letter that I read, that staff have been working very closely together and continue to through the different political machinations that go on, and that's going to continue. You know, it's necessary that our governments work together, and we will continue to do that.
Well, how about this? And I mean, has Summit County then reached out to collaborate with the Park City mayor and city council? I mean, the county represents three times more people than the council. And this isn't a one-way street. I mean, is the city council, the county council sitting back waiting for an invitation?
You know, I think I'd rather not comment on the letter and its context or contents or even the context that you're speaking about, because it's really not my place to do that.
All right. Tom, anything else you want to mention?
No, thank you very much.
Thank you. And that's Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Park City Council will be discussing phase two of the walk committee recommendations to spend the rest of the $15 million that voters approved back in 2007 this week. In the studio with details, I have Park City Trails and Open Space Manager Heinrich Dieters, along with two members of the walk committee, Jennifer Wesselhoff and Alex Butwinski. Good morning to all of you. Thanks.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Leslie.
Heinrich, maybe you can just give us a brief overview. How much money do we have left from the bond to actually spend?
So we have approximately $5 million that left from the bond money. Some of that is dedicated to some of the remaining walk projects like Park Avenue and Olympic Park and stuff. But we're looking at just under that for the next walk point two, 2.0 planning process.
So is there a deadline in how quickly that money has to be spent?
We should be spending that money rather quickly. So yes, that is a condition that we will take into account when finance comes back with a budgeting aspect for the next prioritization list. So yes, that will be a condition that we want to address.
Okay. I mean, is that a requirement of the bond?
I wouldn't say it's a requirement. It is a aspect that our finance and budget departments are encouraging. And to that point, not to get ahead of this discussion, but that is the, you know, should council endorse the walk recommendation to prioritize the tunnel, they will be coming back with a plan. And that will be one of the aspects associated with it.
All right. Any restrictions in how the money's used?
I think the bond language is basically the restriction on how it's used. So I couldn't recite the bond language to you right now, but it's basically walking and biking infrastructure.
All right. And as I mentioned, Jennifer and Alex, members of this walk, 2.0 committee, how long have you all been meeting?
Well, I was one of the original walk 1.0 group, which began in 2007. It seems like a lifetime ago. But our charter was to take a list that one of the engineering firms had put together of major projects to improve connectivity in Park City. So we had a pretty long list of items, and our charge was to prioritize them. We had four really major, maybe five really major projects that we all agreed on. It was interesting, we had 15 people. We met weekly for several months, and every single project that we voted on and in sequence was unanimous. So it was a cross-section of 15 citizens supported by staff. And we went through each one and made our case for each one we were going to do. And out of those came narrowing Holiday Ranch Loop Road, so it was more walkable. We had the two tunnels, the tunnel at Bonanza Drive and the tunnel under Kearns at the school. And then we had the project that we called Jans to Dans, which was a improving walkability between the corner where Jans is and where Dans formerly was, which is now the Park City Market, I guess, at Park City. And so everything that is done, the east side of Park Avenue is in process. I think it's in the budget now and moving forward. So the only real big thing left on in our plan is the tunnel under Kearns at Snow Park and Snow Creek, going across to the Radisson
Doubletree
hotel, and so that's where we ended up. Now, council said they were coming up with new priorities for walkability, and that's the idea where Walk 2.0 came from. And the mayor and council thought it would be a good idea to bring the band back together, as he called us, Walk 1.0, to at least give our input into what connectivity was going to look forward going forward. So that's kind of where we are. Yes.
Yeah. Again. So Jennifer, then how long has that Walk 2 committee been meeting?
Well, we just started. We had a meeting yesterday, and I think we might have had one or two other meetings. I'm new to the committee, pleased to be part of it. I think as a person with fresh eyes to be able to see the past work that the committee has done over the years, a couple of things stand out to me. First and foremost, how thoughtful the city is in bringing a diverse group of stakeholders together and actually listening to the committee's recommendations. recommendation. In fact, the last meeting to bring this recommendation forward, there were a lot of ideas of what we could possibly use the money for instead of the tunnel. We talked through those, and I think the committee was very vocal and unanimous that we wanted to finish the work that the committee put together and get that last project done. And that took a lot of time and a lot of discussion, a lot of thoughtfulness from the community. And that's really what I'm enjoying so much about being part of Park City, is the thoughtfulness and the idea that our community really invests in what they care about. I think one of the reasons, and that's why I'm on the committee, I think the business and the stakeholders need to be at the table to talk about what we can do to improve connectivity, not just in the commercial districts, but all around town.
Yeah. So, Heinrich, maybe just a little history. I mean, the initial assessment, as I recalled, is that we couldn't do a tunnel there between Kearns and that area, the Dans to Jans connection, just because of the amount of utilities underground.
So I wouldn't say that it was, we couldn't do it. What basically happened is we started on the initial design aspects associated with that. We looked at it. Yes, it's going to be difficult. There was an analysis and a recommendation to move it closer to Snow Creek, and that's where we're going to start off again. But I would remind the listeners, we set off on a couple different aspects, one being the tunnel there at the school district that was built over the last several years. We entered into a corridor agreement with, we did a corridor study with UDOT where we were looking at the entire 248 corridor. And then all of these projects, especially when you have to deal with like gaining right-of-way or easements associated with those, they're very difficult. They take a lot of time. And so we're going back and revisiting that aspect. It's not going to be easy. And basically what we're telling council and we're telling the community that we've heard walk 1.0, that we need to prioritize this tunnel, and it's going to take a year or two until we design and build this. So it's going to take a little bit of time, and then lo and behold, guess what? We don't have enough money for that as well. So if council, again, endorses this prioritization of this tunnel project, staff will then be charged to come back with a finance plan to address those and a design plan. But what we're going to do immediately is to actually look at the design and engineering and feasibility of that as soon as possible, of where exactly that tunnel location will be, because that begs the question, hence the Walk 2.0. It has to connect to a network of some sort, right? So we can't just build it. A tunnel to nowhere is the term that we use sometime. And so it really is, I'm proud of this, as proud of this Walk 2.0 process as I was at the beginning, because it really is time to reprioritize, get the community back, and look at where we want to put our efforts for walkability.
All right, what are some of the thoughts, though? I mean, is it more important to have that tunnel under Kearns, or is it more important to have it under Park Avenue?
So what I heard from the group, it's always been Kearns. So, and from this Walk 2.0, and it was in 2007. So, you know, if you're unfamiliar with that area, the McLeod Creek Trail comes in where the old dance is, the Fresh right. Market. It comes in, and it goes through this Olympic Park project, which you're seeing being constructed with the water line right now. And so, you know, there were four tenets of the Walk 1.0, and one of them was regional connectivity. And so the beauty of this community, and this is why it's so great to have someone like Jennifer on the committee, is you can get on your bike or you can walk from Main Street, and you can go all the way out almost to Parley Summit, or you can walk all the way out to like IHC through this bike path connectivity. But right there at 224 and 248 is this black hole. And it's been there in 2006, 2007, and it's still there. And so it should be prioritized, in my opinion. And it should cross Kearns, the two commercial areas, to come into that. But we're going to learn a lot through the feasibility study.
Right, right. So we've got $5 million. How much do tunnels cost today?
We're projecting $7 million at the moment. But again, you know, it's a prioritization discussion with council Thursday night, and then we'll do that feasibility analysis and design, and we'll have a much better idea of what the cost will be.
Okay. And again, I mean, is there some thought that in the future we do need a crossing under where we've got that Hawk Beacon between Fresh Market and the condos?
Yeah, we've looked at that before. Mm-hmm. So, Leslie, for the listeners, you might remember that actually the original tunnel was going to go from Jan's to Cole Sport. We looked at that area. We looked at where the Hawk Beacon is, and we also looked at Kearns. You know, each one has its different attributes and benefits associated with it. Right now, I think we're all rowing the right, you know, the same direction, and that's good for the community. And so we're going to focus our energies there. And I would also like to say, I've lived in this community for a long time, much like yourself. I can't think of any walkability infrastructure that we've put in, tunnel, et cetera, that isn't appreciated. We actually take it for granted now. We're like, wow, look at that. I can go under Poison Creek. I can go under Deer Valley Drive. No one really looks back and says, good job, team. I'm glad we really did that, right? Or second guesses it. It's a lot like open space. When we put this underpass or tunnel, if you will, in that area, it will be a huge amenity for the community.
All right. At one point, council was talking about using the remainder of this bond money for the Arts and Culture District. With that kind of on hold, that means that developers are going to have to figure that out, their walkability?
Well, you know what? I'd rather have Alex or... So, yes, but that was a big discussion point, so I'd rather have the walk committee actually answer that.
Yeah, we did a walking tour with a bunch of the original committee, and we looked at what our priorities were then, what they are now. I think what Heinrich touched on, which is this big gap between being able to go from McLeod Creek, you know, across Kearns, was huge. It was a priority for us then. It was a total mess back in 2000, 2008, and we wanted to fix that. So in our walking tour, we walked through the tentative plans for the Arts and Culture District, but we're really not sure what's going to go there. And so why would we build an infrastructure if we're not sure what's going to be there? We do want to spend the $5 million remaining from the walk bond. And it just seemed like a logical thing to, and again, I'm totally biased because it was part of the original work that I did with the other members of the committee. That was the biggest gap. I don't remember exactly, but I think that was our number one. And you're right, there were some incredible logistics issues, kind of what happened under Bonanza too. But so that's how we ended up there. I mean, Heinrich's right. I can go from my house in Park Meadows to Main Street without crossing a major road. And that's significant.
And Jennifer, with your kind of fresh eyes, how did you see that, you know, in terms of the original intent and then the plan to use it for the arts and culture?
It was a really interesting discussion. I did a lot of listening to what the previous goals were of the bond and review the projects. But I think where the committee ended up is definitely on the right side of that issue with not knowing exactly what's happening in that arts and culture district and then being able to plan when we do know what's going to go there, to plan the budget and the walkability and the potentially transit in that location should all be part of that grand development for that particular spot. So to use the money, to use the bond for the projects that were originally identified is what the committee felt was the right way to go.
Okay, so Heinrich, this is on the agenda for when?
It's 4:15. I looked last night, but I didn't see the report live. So it was targeted at 4:15. So can you look at that real quick?
Yeah, I'm pulling it up, but still not posted. So okay. I don't have that.
And Leslie, I'd just like to make one point. You know, we started with the walkability bond. And for those people who weren't around, like, there was no walkability funding. It was just the capital, you know, project process, you know, before the bond. You know, and it really has helped our community. But moving forward, it's not going to be necessarily just about those bond funds, right? I mean, we have to look collectively, Julia Collins and her team in transportation planning, a lot of grants that are out there, a lot of different opportunities, a lot of capital. So again, if council endorses this, coming back and having that discussion on the finance plan to look at walkability will be very, very important. I would encourage not only people to listen this evening, but that next meeting, if council gives that direction, will be very, very important.
Okay, Heinrich. Jennifer, Alex, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thanks, Leslie.
Well, on August 19th, the Park City Council approved a contract for wildfire mitigation and forest health work for the Treasure Hill Open Space to begin this month. In the studio with details, I have David Tellian. He's the owner of Alpine Forestry, serving as technical experts for the project. Good morning, David.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So start just by telling us what Alpine Forestry is. What is it that you do?
Sure. Alpine Forestry is a land management company. We're based right here in Park City. We're focused on responding to local and regional issues affecting our landscapes. We have a heavy emphasis on fire resiliency and are trying to be a local resource for improvements in that arena.
So this contract was for how much?
So the council approved $300,000 to be spent over several years dedicated to the Treasure Hill parcel. Those funds could go to several different contractors. We just happened to be the first ones in and are tasked with creating a management plan that would then give direction to work to be done on the ground.
Okay, and so that's where your expertise is in deciding what work needs to be done and then hiring the contractors in to do the specific work, or does your company do that as well?
So a little of both. Initially, we need to get out there on the ground, create project maps, see the state of the fuels and the different stands, and come up with some priorities. Our company also performs the implementation work as well, but potentially on a smaller scale compared to the needs of Treasure Hill. And so we're looking at options to bring in additional contractors.
Yeah, how much acreage are we talking about?
It's about 104.
Okay, and you said it's going to be done over several years, so what are you going to be focusing on before the snow flies?
Correct. Working forests on this much land, it takes time, and this fall we're in the mapping stage of the parcel and collecting a bunch of data, and we'll have a report that we present to the city in April of next year. So that's where the project stands right now. We do have a small team doing some defensible space thinning behind homes right on the west side of town here as just an immediate action item.
Okay. So you have been out in the field just to look at I guess, the most precarious situation? Yeah.
Correct. We started in early September.
Okay.
Our mapping process.
So maybe you can explain, why is it important that this type of work is being done? And really, until a year ago, we never really heard about it happening at all.
Yeah, that's a great point. Utah is turning a corner from being a little less prone to, high-intensity wildfire to being more prone. And here in the Park City area, things get more complicated because we're in the wildland-urban interface. And, there's quite a bit of homes, business, commerce, right adjacent to the open lands. Many open lands around here at the resorts, just all around town have not seen any prevention work done to prepare for these drought conditions and increase fire intensity, increase fire frequency as well. And so the momentum locally is to take more action, managing the land, reducing that fuel load to, reduce fire intensity for those inevitable moments when we're dealing with that as a community.
Yeah. So drought's not the only problem, though, facing the trees. I mean, we've got a lot of beetle infestation as well.
Correct. And a lot of that is actually drought-driven. So the different pests and disease processes in forests thrive in drought conditions.
Yeah. And I'm guessing you're making the argument that this shouldn't be just a one-time deal. This is something that should be happening every year, all the time.
Correct. Yeah, there's dynamic changes happening in the land around here constantly, and we just have to be adaptable and respond to those, and it's going to be a process that is extremely extended.
Yeah, can you explain kind of quickly what the process is for determining which trees stay and which go? I mean, is it just basically if it's alive or not?
I can touch on that for sure. For instance, the most noticeable part of the Treasure Hill land is the conifer stand in and around the town lift area. And the most noticeable part of that stand is the concentration of dead standing trees. Those trees are definitely adding to the fuel load in the area, which makes the parcels susceptible to high intensity fire. And so the dead standing trees are certainly to be targeted, but in general, our forests, not having seen natural fire in many, many decades, are incredibly overgrown. And so in addition to the dead standing trees, there is just too many live trees as well, and they're crowding each other out, and there's limited resources for those, and it's an unhealthy forest. So we do preserve certain amount of dead trees to serve as hosts for wildlife, but also focus on selectively thinning live trees to create a more fire resilient landscape.
Yeah, and certainly a year ago there was a lot of criticism that our forests were being cut down there in the Summit Park area. I think your company also did the work for that.
So we came behind a crew out of Oregon that did a bulk of the work, and our company performed the pile burning to kind of get rid of that biomass. So cutting was done, thinning was done. It was left in piles. When winter came around, our company came in and burnt just over 1,000 piles on Basin Recreation property last winter. And yeah, I do understand there's changes that take place in the forest. And it's shocking to some people, but the effects, the positive change will really play out over time. And if you go back hiking up there this summer, it's just beautiful. It's more open, and it's also a lot safer for the Summit Park community.
Yeah, as we saw, right, with the
Parley's
fire.
With the Parley's Canyon fire. And so we're, that the Parley's Canyon fire for sure speaks to the risk that we take by living up here, and we're now back-to-back years of fast-spreading fires off of I-80, on top of really a devastating fire in Rockport a few years ago, and a very close call at the bottom of Tollgate Canyon just a couple years ago. So that's what I was talking about earlier. That fire frequency is increasing.
Yeah. So will we see some of those piles then this fall that will be burnt this winter?
Yes, the plan currently is we'll have burning back in Summit Park this year. Pinebrook community is looking at burning some piles that we built last year. We've got piles in the Sun Peak community area, but then also piles built here in Old Town on city ground, and those are slated to be burnt late fall, early winter, under snow conditions.
Yeah, so the piles aren't necessarily buried in snow?
No, they're not fully buried. We target them when there's about a foot or so on the ground so that we can get them going easily enough, but manage their intensity, and then they go out quickly.
Yeah, so why can't it be used for firewood?
So where we build piles, it's usually in terrain that is inaccessible to equipment, inaccessible to vehicles. And so there's really no other option, with that biomass, but to just arrange it in a pile in a safe spot and get rid of it in the winter environment.
Okay. And that's basically when we'll see that happen, when about a foot of snow is on the ground and no wind. And
yes. Yeah. The burn is carefully constructed, carefully managed, signed off on by local agencies, county and state. And yeah, this is something that's new to the Park City area. So when you see smoke in the air in the winter, don't worry. It's a managed fire, and we've got staff there, and It's a project that's been approved and is very safe.
Well, let us know when that happens. We'd be happy to get the word out just to give people a heads up about it is happening.
That's so. The plan. There will be a coordinated effort from the city as well as from us, Alpine Forestry, to just keep everyone informed.
Okay. Hey, David, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, thanks for this opportunity and hope to come back sometime and give updates.
Okay, love to have you. Thank you.
Thank you.
David Tellian again, the owner of Alpine Forestry, serving as the technical experts for the clearing there of the Treasure Hill Wildfire Mitigation Project.